Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com, and with me as always is Hannah Bookdahl of chickflix.net. Hello, Hannah.
Hello, Charlie.
Why is this a special edition, Hannah?
This is a special edition because when we get through all of our regular What's Coming Out This Week rundown, we are going to do a special episode that is about the AFI Documentary Festival. And Artie Chick from chickflix.net will join us for that.
Double the Cinema Clash, double the awesomeness.
Double the Artie factor, I believe. I think you guys might gang up on me. I'm just predicting that might be the case.
Two Arties versus one mainstream.
Exactly.
Well, let's hit off with the biggest movies of this week. We're going to cover the two wide releases this 4th of July weekend. That's The Legend of Tarzan and The BFG. And then we're going to go into four smaller movies. That's three independent films and a documentary this week. So we have a lot to cover, so let's just dive right in.
Let's do it.
The Legend of Tarzan, starring Alexander Skarsgård's eight-pack abs.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
I'm going to vote for the eight-pack abs for Best Supporting Actor.
Well, I'm going to vote for Margot Robbie for Best Supporting Actress, wondering how in the world she managed to have flawless makeup while out in the jungle.
She was, for being in the middle of the Congo and, you know, held captive without showers, she was all right.
There must have been a CVS around the tree, you know, that we just didn't notice.
So another Hollywood revolution has come around. What once was is again. So they did The Lone Ranger a couple years ago with Johnny Depp.
Which was awful.
Back in the 90s, they did The Mask of Zorro. So just like Zorro and just like The Lone Ranger, let's resurrect Tarzan, who used to be huge in the 1930s with Johnny Weissmuller. He did 12 Tarzan films, everything from Tarzan the Ape-Man to like Tarzan Meets the Martians, the whole gamut. So he's back, and now it's Swede. Alexander Skarsgård.
It's a very different take, though, from those old movies.
No, I mean, it's, you know what it is? It's, they cater now to modern sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
They're concerned about the environment, which they weren't in the 30s. You see a lot of shots of, like, elephant tusks. They weren't concerned about that back then. And there's a pedophile priest joke.
That's right. And they're concerned about race relations and slavery. And so, yeah, did the world need another Tarzan? Absolutely not. But was this movie actually pretty darn good? Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised.
The movie's pretty darn average to not good. But the best thing about it was not in 3D.
Well, but I disagree. I think a lot of people came out of that movie. Everyone kept their expectations low. And I think it's very funny that the general consensus seems to be, wow, that movie was a lot better than I expected it to be. People were expecting it to be bad, and it really wasn't. And then when I saw some of the other movies of the week, I appreciated Tarzan even more.
So it was directed by David Yates. The only thing he's done, he did the last four Harry Potters. That's it. That's all he's ever done, and now this is his next first time directing not a Harry Potter movie. So, you know, he started off his career with a really big bang. And now he's, you know, exploring new territory. But it's really not new territory. Everyone knows the story of Tarzan, and it's not linear. It's a dual track. You know, we do flashbacks. Every time there's like a turn in the narrative, we flash back to the orphan boy, and then we flash back forward to when John Clayton, pardon me, not Tarzan, but John Clayton, is, you know, living in dreary gray London, and they want him to go back to the Congo on this, like, publicity tour. And Samuel L. Jackson drops in as George Washington Williams, because he's an American diplomat, and he wants to prove that not all is on the up and up with the Belgian king here.
Yeah, and Samuel Jackson's role, he's the comic relief in this movie, and so I think what made it easier to take than anyone expected was it's got a little of everything. It's a romance between John and Jane, Tarzan and Jane. And they're married, you know, they're sort of this really...
Well, we wouldn't want them living in
really,
sin, you know.
You know, really functional couple. She definitely is his partner and equal in many ways. And so she's a strong female character. Samuel Jackson provides sort of this buddy comedy kind of thing going on when he and Tarzan are together in the jungle. And there's, you know, some points you feel like you're out on a safari, and it's a really interesting mix of genres in this one movie, and the pace, it moved pretty quickly.
It moved quickly. There's a lot of action. People get keep getting kidnapped and then escaped and then kidnapped. And I didn't really care for Jackson's character. I thought he was superfluous. He didn't really fit. He was just a tag along. But what I really didn't care for was Christoph Waltz as the bad guy. He is Leon Rome, kind of the king's man in Congo, setting up this slavery operation to steal all the diamonds. You've seen this before. He did the same thing as Hans Landa in Inglourious Basterds, Inspector, the last James Bond film. He talks his victims to death instead of hurting them. He talks this very soft-spoken Waltz talk.
Yeah, he definitely always seems to be presenting the same character front. And his character didn't do much for me, but it was a means to an end. Again, I don't think we really needed this movie. It was sort of like the whole when another Spider-Man comes out and people go, did we really need a reboot of Spider-Man right now? And the answer is generally no. And so it's not that I think this movie needed to be made. I just think that if you're looking for, it's sort of like your traditional superhero movie. And if you like that sort of thing, then I think you might like Tarzan. And it's relatively harmless for like a family movie if you've got older kids.
Yeah, I think it's kind of throwaway action adventure. There's a lot worse action adventure out there, so it's mid grade. It's mm-hmm. not great. And there's motion capture gorillas here, and they do not approach the fidelity of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Those are a lot better. I think these were a little bit knockoff-ish.
Yeah, but this one's got good eye candy and is just a good summer popcorn movie. And I liked it better than the next big release that we're going to talk about.
Love your transition. However, I just remembered something. Skarsgård's acting. I've never seen a more expressionless, not necessarily Tarzan, but expressionless actor. He just stares and he's very stoic and he does not emote and he's cardboard.
Oh, I disagree, especially when he's actually able to interact with his wife, with Jane. Then I think you see the emotion kind of come out.
He's softer cardboard, yes.
But again, he's fine to look at. So if he wanted to keep an expressionless face for part of it, I was okay with that, because generally you're kind of looking at him when he starts swinging from trees and showing those abs, and you're like, wow, he makes a pretty darn good Tarzan.
He spent some time in the gym.
He did.
I agree with you that Tarzan is just a little bit better than the next one we're going to talk about. What is that?
That would be the BFG.
Ooh.
And I had to keep reminding myself what that stood for. So it's the Big Friendly Giant.
Hmm.
And that is definitely a fantasy adventure movie for kids. And it is based on the Roald Dahl book, and I think anyone who is familiar with the BFG story will absolutely like this movie. I was not particularly familiar with the story, and I found this movie to be very draggy in the middle. Ultimately, I think fans of the story will like it, but anyone who doesn't, if you don't have kids to take who aren't particularly keen to see it, I don't think they should bother.
So directed by Steven Spielberg,
mm-hmm.
He's taken a break from his history studies, Amistad, Munich, Bridge of Spies, he's known for history. He likes, and Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
But this is
E.T.
This is imagination. Yeah. Steven Spielberg, he co-founded DreamWorks. So this is like Hook. This is like The Adventures of Tintin. And it's darker. Children's fantasy, just like all Roald Dahl, is a little bit darker. So it's like, it's not 5-6 year olds, it's for, I think, 8 to 10 year olds is in their wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And it's darker. It's like, Willy Wonka was the first film adapting a Roald Dahl story in 1971, Gene Wilder, and that's kind of a darker movie when you look back on it. And man, Roald Dahl hated that movie. And I don't know why, because that's, a beloved classic. And I wonder what Dahl would think of Spielberg's interpretation, vision of such a now beloved children's book, this 1982 book, The BFG.
It's hard to know. My guess is that he would have actually been pretty okay with the casting. I think the casting was very good in this film. The little girl who plays Sophie is good. But it is a little dark and scary, because you've got this little girl who's basically snatched from an orphanage.
King Kong style, by the way.
Yeah.
This big hand comes in the window.
Yeah, and taken away to, giant country forever and ever, because she had caught a glimpse of this giant who normally would be able to sort of camouflage himself as he was going through the streets of London. And She's somebody who really doesn't sleep at night in her orphanage and seems to keep watch over the neighborhood. And so she is snatched because she saw this guy. And it's really then about this budding relationship, this friendship between her and the giant, who's a good giant, unlike his brothers who are bad giants who live also in giant country. And it's some of the kids, I think, were a little taken aback early in the movie as to how dark it was.
Yeah, it turns out the BFG is the runt of the litter. His 9 older brothers are enormous, and they're carnivorous. They eat children, and the BFG is a vegetarian, and he has all these sloppy, squishy vegetables. But what really struck me, what was lacking in this movie, is story. Like, nothing was... Once she gets to Giant Country, it puts the brakes on. Nothing happens. They go to... the BFG is a dream catcher, dream maker, and then, like, dream distributor. He goes to a tree.
No sense.
And you don't know what... Maybe it explains... I never read the book. Maybe it explains that in the book.
Maybe.
We don't know why he messes around with dreams, but he goes to the dream tree up in the clouds. They chase him around like insects, and nothing happens. Oh my Lord, nothing happens.
Yeah, there's this huge stretch in the middle of the movie where I was definitely tuning out. But the movie picks up for me actually closer to the end. So it lightens up and picks up at a point where the giant and little girl Sophie go to meet with the queen to solicit her help and the army's help to basically hatch a plan to get rid of all these other giants who are, in fact, eating some of the local children. And at that point, it felt more like a combination of Annie. You know, I felt a little bit of the Little Orphan Annie story going on there. And at that point, the vibe, and a little even Princess Diaries, for people who kind of like that vein, that's kind of the turn that it took. And I enjoyed the latter part of the movie significantly more. The middle part completely lost me. And so overall, I was not terribly impressed with this movie. Mark Rylance as the giant.
I'm going to correct you.
Okay, so this is how exactly... I was listening to the trailer today, and I could have sworn they said, so Mark Rylance. And I know we had a listener, Jan Shockett, who had written into us about the last time that we used Mark Rylance.
I think she thinks it's Rylance, maybe? Rylance?
Maybe.
Emphasis on the Rye?
Yeah, and so, or was it an emphasis on the Lance? I'm not sure. But anyway, what I heard when I was listening to the movie trailer was Mark Rylance. Like Mark Rylance. So I'm still not sure if I'm saying it correctly, but I apologize to Jan if she's listening and we're still saying it wrong, because I'm just not quite sure where that accent's supposed to be.
Well, he is the best part of the movie.
He acts
very well. He's got a lot of gibberish lexicon to say, these made up words that Sophie, it's weird, she kept calling him on these words. That's the wrong word, BFG, or you're making up words. And you know what? That felt kind of un-Disney. Like, they're supposed to be about inclusion and respecting people who are different from you, and it felt like she was almost making fun of them. That's what I picked up a little bit. But she's a very strong female protagonist.
Absolutely.
Once she gets over her original fear, which is very quick, she becomes a tag-along. I want to go here with you. I'm going to go here with you. And she becomes, like, you know, you said Princess Diaries and Annie. I say Wizard of Oz. She props him up like Dorothy propped up the Cowardly Lion.
Yeah.
And that's what I took from that. But it's not strong enough to make me go anywhere near recommending this film. It's way too boring, and the best parts is when it relies on fart jokes.
Oh yeah, the boys loved. Oh my gosh, they cracked up. The boys in the audience absolutely cracked up at these big green farts that were let loose when characters would drink a certain green liquid. Whiz poppers that the BFG would ferment in his cave or whatever it was. Mm. So yeah, there was a bit of that sophomoric humor that the boys did appreciate. So I wouldn't recommend it for anyone who wasn't already going to see this movie because they like the BFG. They know the BFG. They've read it. I do think it was kind of cool visually with the way they... Mark Rylance is very expressive. And it's sort of this combination CG, real life kind of thing.
Yeah, so Sophie's real as can be, and all the giants, including Mark, are, they're animated, but they're, you know, based on actual actors' performances, but they are animated through and through, but they're photorealistic. Yeah. They share the same space as Sophie. They're, yeah. Even though they're not there, they're really imposing.
Yeah, so when you would see those close-ups of his expressive eyes and stuff, you know, it was impressive. I don't think you really had that. You didn't have that technology in previous movies. So I think it's definitely good for the BFG fans. Anyone else, I would not bother.
Well, while the BFG is saturating theaters this weekend, like 4,000 theaters, I think if this next film is playing in your area, you should take the kids to this one instead. Take them to see New Zealand's The Hunt for the Wilder People, which actually is New Zealand's number one grossing New Zealand film of all time. Shattered New Zealand records. It actually shattered the same record of the director who had the previous record, which was What We Do in the Shadows, which was hilarious. This was from last year. So the director is Taika Waititi. And he focuses on our protagonist, which is a foster kid, Ricky Baker. Played by Julian Dennison. And Ricky, he's rotund. He's a larger-than-life fella. And he, as social services would tell you, he's a bad egg. He throws rocks and sets things on fire and graffiti. And you know what? When they do that, they go through this like rap sheet of Ricky's. You know, it's minor stuff, but it feels like Wes Anderson almost, this montage. And he gets taken in by this most loving woman on a farm, out-of-the-way ranch. And Hector there, her husband, is played by Sam Neill, if you remember him from Jurassic Park.
Yep.
And he's very gruff. Doesn't want Ricky there. He's, you know, he must have had a hard life. But I don't want it to sound harsh. It's a comedy. You're meant to laugh. It's funny. It's an adventure. And it's 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Everybody loves The Hunt for the Wilder People.
Well, obviously, because even I liked it, and it's an indie. So you know it's got to be good. I saw this movie at the start of an 8-day, 9-movie stretch. And so I'd almost forgotten about it. And when I went back and thought about it, I was like, wow, I remember now. That movie was good in its quirkiness. You know, I sometimes take exception.
You don't like quirk.
I generally have a hard time with quirk that's not entertaining. But this is entertaining quirk, and I really had no idea where it was going. And you just have to kind of go with it, and the performances are great. It's a little bizarre, and there's some... I was told going in that there was some sort of like almost like a horror film aspect to it based on the director's previous stuff. And you really, that doesn't come through except for maybe one or two scenes where there's just a little bit of what exactly is going on here.
I'm not picking up the horror thing. I did not see it.
There were a couple of weird moments where there was just some like chopping or something. There was some animal stuff.
Oh, the animal stuff?
Yeah.
They live on a farm.
I know, but there was just some stuff that you just suddenly were like brought out of the moment for a second. But it really was, based on the performances and the dialogue and the interesting factor, I definitely would recommend it. It's one of those rare indies that absolutely can be accessible to the mainstream audience as well and is worth seeking out. But I think it's got to be older kids. I think it was...
Yeah.
It's at least PG-13, if not R.
There's no way it's R. I'd give it to 12, 13-year-olds. They'd be fine. Maybe even 11s.
I don't know about 11.
You know, the first 10 minutes sets you up. You know where you're going. And, man, it pulls the rug right out from under you. I do not want to give it away. You don't want to know what happens, but it pulls the rug right out from under you and takes just the biggest turn ever. And for the first like 4 or 5 minutes, when it happened, I was nonplussed, Hannah. I did not like it. I was like, oh, this is a bad change, mistake, Taika. And no, it worked. It had to happen, I suppose, for there to be a conflict, for the movie to have to go somewhere.
And The Hunt for the Wilder People really is making reference to the fact that this kid and Hector are basically on the run in the bush from the authorities, from child services at one point just wants to take him back.
She reminded me, by the way, did you see Moonrise Kingdom? Wes Anderson's Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah.
Tilda Swinton was in there as a character called Social Services.
Right.
And she reminded me of Tilda Swinton.
Yeah.
And she is funny. She's so overboard.
She is definitely an over-the-top social services person who thinks she's who makes this play of, you know, no child left behind.
That's her mantra, no child left behind.
That's right. That's that's what she's going for. And so it's a lot about mistake, you know, miscommunications about what's happening with the boy and whether he's safe. And so it is definitely, and the kid is funny and strange, and the Sam Neill character, it really is just about their journey together and how they help each other sort of find happiness. And
it's like an odd couple. Ricky does not belong in the bush. I mean, no. Look at him. He's the clothes he wears, the food he eats. He does not belong there.
Yeah, he reminds me of the kid who plays Manny on Modern Family.
Yeah, I guess he
reminded me a lot of that
Rico
kid.
Rodriguez is his name.
Yeah, so it was a very similar kind of character. And when you talk about that, though, and not belonging in the bush like that, there was a very funny opening scene where they had actually crafted one of those turn off your cell phone PSAs before the movie, and it was the Sam Neill character and the kid in the bush with a wildfire, and the kid's cell phone is ringing. And so first they're staring out at the audience like it's the audience's fault, and then you realize that the kid has his cell phone out in the bush. So it was just a very cute way to do it, and then the director himself actually did a little intro kind of thanking people for seeing his movie, and you knew right away that this director was just enjoying the quirky factor and that he thrives on that. And it was a very successful outing, I think.
It's, you know, it oddly enough, it just sticks in my head. I've been humming it, like the soundtrack sticks in your head. I looked it up.
Baker.
I've been listening to it on Spotify. Like, it's good, and the music is abnormally good for a movie, you know, just so left field like this. And I've been quoting it at the office. Ricky and social services are looking at each other across this chasm. He's like, "I'm the Terminator, and I'm coming to get you." He's like, "Yeah, if anybody's the Terminator, I'm the Terminator." No, he's like, "No, I'm the Terminator. I said it first. You're like Sarah Connor. You're like Sarah Connor in the first movie before she could do chin-ups."
That's
hysterical.
It was very clever. Very clever. Again, we actually agree on this one, Charlie. Unlike the next one, we agree on this one.
Man, do we disagree on the next one. Hey, you were mad about this one. I remember I finished it, and I texted you, like a curse word. Yeah. Holy Hannah, oh my Lord. And I think you finished it like 10 minutes later, and
I just responded blew your in mind. Kind, only my curse word was a little more overt. I could not believe that that you liked this movie, because I absolutely did not. And the fact that you actually gave it more stars than you gave Tarzan. I'm like,
I gave it a full star more. I got the same amount of stars as Wilder People.
And that is crazy. That is just, actually, that's not just crazy. It's wrong.
So we're talking about the new Todd Solondz. And he is I know when I'm watching a Solondz film. Like,
He's a director, by the way.
I know when I'm watching a Wes Anderson film, I can see it. I know when I'm watching a Tarantino film, I can hear it. And man, I know when I'm watching a Solondz film. This is called Wiener Dog. And when it premiered earlier this year at Sundance, right towards the end when that big climax happened, half the audience got up and booed and walked out.
You can guess which half I would have been in.
And so he won the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance in 1996 with Welcome to the Dollhouse. And then in 1998, he did Happiness, which I think is his best film, and it was one of the best films of that year. He did Storytelling, Palindrome, so a lot of titles that a lot of people never heard of. They don't know Solondz, but some of us do, and we follow him. And what he does is he films awkward. He films uncomfortable, and he makes you uncomfortable. And this time, what he did was four separate vignettes, sub-films in one film, and he ties it all together through one wiener dog, a dachshund.
And that is the name of the film, is Wiener Dog.
But the film is not about the dog. It's not about the travels and, you know, tribulations of a dog. The dog's kind of, he's just there just to be, he's a transition. Pardon me, she's a transition. And I don't want to go into each separate vignette. Some are stronger than others. I think the strongest one stars Danny DeVito. You've never, you know, everyone knows Danny DeVito, but they don't know him as this character, as struggling screenwriting professor Dave Schmertz. Even his name just sounds phlegmy, Schmertz. Yeah. And he is just a sad sack of depression, and nothing is going good with this guy. But how it ends up, and that's where my wife got up and left the room anyway. She just couldn't handle the movie anymore. And the fourth segment stars Ellen Burstyn as a very old woman, very funny old woman.
I didn't see how she was funny.
She was hysterical.
Oh, no.
I know why you don't like this movie. I know. I understand. I feel empathy for you. But there's something about this movie that just... It was so odd and so, you know, it's really about segments of the human condition that, you know, make people uncomfortable. He films stories about suicide, rape, just awful things. And you know what? Sometimes it can't be all Care Bears and sunshine, Hannah.
Gee, what's not to love about those things? You know, there are some movies like Wilder People where I was pleasantly surprised. This one I was just surprisingly disappointed because you see, and it opens, you see this cute little wiener dog on the movie poster. The movie opens and you see this dog basically being rescued from being euthanized in an animal shelter. And it triggers this journey of this dog going from one oddball owner to the next. You never really know or understand why. Or, you know, the transitions are...
Well, some you do. Between the first and second vignette, you get it. But I don't think you need to know why it transitions sometimes.
No, but I think you do have to like this guy's movies. And this is not a mainstream flick that people will want to see.
No, it's the opposite of mainstream.
It's the opposite of mainstream. And it is... it's got this... But what was misleading to me going in, it's like not only do you start with this cute dog and think you're going to be able to see how this dog positively changed the lives of these people that he touched, which is the movie that I was expecting. But it's got this really good cast. And so it has, you know, Greta Gerwig and Ellen Burstyn and Danny DeVito. And so you're watching it.
Because people recognize they want to work with a good director.
Well, Greta Gerwig is just, she's always quirky.
All right, it's what she does.
She just plays quirky indie characters. And so I'm kind of over that.
I love her for that.
And you were saying that she was actually playing the same character in one of his other movies, so I've never seen
The girl she's playing was the main character in Welcome to the Dollhouse. You do not need to see the early one to get this. But for those of us that remember that film, it's actually fascinating to see the next, what happened 20 years later between her and the other guy, because they have a history.
Well, my colleague Artie Chick at chickflix.net agreed with you. She she pretty much, well, but she agreed with me too. She knew that this movie was not going to be for everyone. Mm-mm. And that it is strictly an Artie movie. It is not a mainstream accessible flick. So you two were aligned on that. But again, I can't even begin to believe that you could actually give it 3 stars and give some relatively
I was in a good mood when I finished it. It was one of those that is so shocking at points, and it breaks the mold. Like, Tarzan was so rote. It was so routine. It's every other movie ever made. You've never seen anything like Wiener Dog.
Yeah, and I never want to again. And so I think I don't want dark and disturbing in the summer. I want uplifting and fun and light and maybe
don't let the seasons impact your mood.
Oh my God, who needs to be handed some SAD for some seasonal affective disorder courtesy of a Wiener Dog in the middle of summer?
This is the best time to see it. You want to watch it in the winter time?
No,
and when it's
wanna,
dark and dreary outside?
I don't want to watch it any time of the year.
I knew you were going to hate this movie. I'm sorry, I'm surprised you watched the movie, and I'm surprised you finished the movie.
I finished it.
But it's short.
It was probably an hour and a half.
It's 90 minutes.
Yeah, so I finished it because I kept waiting to see where this was going to go, and then where it went just floored me, and I'm like, oh, God.
If you're out there and you're listening to this, I think you already do like off-the-beaten-path movies. So Wiener Dog, I think, might be right. Like, if you don't watch movies smaller than the BFG, I don't even know why you're listening to this podcast anyway. So, like, I think our listeners would be fascinated by Wiener Dog.
I hope we have a few mainstream listeners out there who just want to know what's a good movie to go see when it's a little hot outside and they're going to go into an air-conditioned theater and they want to just go see some good escapist fare.
Wilder People. Go see Wilder People.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with putting Wilder People first, Tarzan second, BFG third, and Wiener Dog 250th.
Oh, Hannah. All right. Well, even though you saw like 9 films in 8 days, I did see 2 movies that are being released this weekend that you did not see. And I want to quickly cover them. And one of them is your favorite genre when I do this. It's one of those French films that was released last year in France, was nominated for a bunch of Césars, and now is opening here. This one is called Les Cowboys. And it is a somewhat contemporary retelling of 1965's seminal Western, The Searchers. Do you ever see The Searchers with John Wayne?
Nope.
Director John Ford. Like, when people say, what's the best Western of all time? A lot of people say The Searchers. So this one takes place in France. They replace Native Americans with Islamists. They're at the county fair. guy's looking around, where's my daughter? My daughter's missing. And he spends the next however many years of his life searching for his daughter. Did she get kidnapped? Did she run away? Nobody knows anything. And he becomes obsessed. He drives his family away from him. He drives his friends away from him. He becomes poor, all because the main character is really not him. The main character is The Search, just like John Wayne's The Searchers. It's a little bit darker than John Wayne's, and it's about contemporary things like the run-up to 9/11, the after effects of 9/11. It's about the Arab minority living in Europe. There's a lot of sub-themes going on here. John C. Reilly pops up. So an American does pop up in the film. It was nominated for Césars, like Best Actor, Most Promising Actor, but didn't win anything. It's not the best foreign film of the year, but out of all these French ones we've been talking about, remember, like Marguerite, Standing Tall, Mustang is in there. So this is up there. It's better than most. It's not better than Mustang, but it's better than the other ones. I don't know if this is your cup of tea or not. It's a thriller. Like, you really want to know what happened to this girl. And it's about 2 hours long of a search.
Yeah, I kind of read the little synopsis and was like, oh, it sounds like Taken, but in a very whacked out sort of way.
He does not have Liam Neeson skills.
He doesn't have skills.
He has persistence.
He doesn't have the skills.
But he does not have a certain set of skills.
That's right. Liam Neeson has a certain set of skills. And so when I saw the little synopsis of that movie, after having seen 9 movies in a week, I was like, no, that one just ain't going to happen. Sorry.
I didn't think you were going to watch it. And I think if you're a fan of the Western, you should check this out. It's not if you're a fan or not of French films. It doesn't matter. This could be in any language. And it doesn't take place in the desert like a Western would. It takes place in cities around Europe and even a couple Middle Eastern countries. But it feels like a Western. And the man is on a mission, and he's going to complete his mission, even if he hurts himself doing it. I'm not thinking about it as much as other thrillers that stay in my head. It's a little bit forgetful. I'm glad it's over. But, you know, it's
well,
it's work.
You can always go watch Wiener Dog again.
I would rather watch the Wiener. I like Wiener Dog better than Lay Cowboys. I'd give that like a 2.5.
I haven't even heard anything about Lay Cowboys. Like,
it's very small.
It's got to be. And so, I mean, John C. Reilly shows up and, you know, it's interesting that he appears in it. But
it was at Cannes last year. It was in the director's fortnight. It's the first time director. It was in the he wrote Rust and Bone, if you remember that. He wrote A Prophet. So now he's jumped from screenwriting to directing, and I think he's an up and comer. He did really, really good with challenging material. But the next one we're going to end on and transition with actually is a documentary, and it's much lighter at first. It's called Tickled, about CET, competitive endurance tickling. They strap a young virile male down to a bed and they tickle him, and they make videos of it and they put it on the internet, and the kid gets, you know, well paid for it in kid money. But so a guy in New Zealand, back to New Zealand again, David Ferrier is his name, and he is like a pop culture reporter for a local news television station. He does quirky stories. So he sees information about competitive endurance tickling. It's like, ooh, this is right at my wheelhouse. I have to report on this. He emails the media company fronting them, and he gets back the strangest email. It's like, no, we don't associate with homosexuals or gay Kiwis. And when you're like, what do you mean? Tickling's kind of gay anyway, when you think about it. And so he starts peeling the onion. He starts digging into this mystery. And it almost turns into this horror thriller documentary. Like, oh my Lord, what is going on? Who is behind the curtain? It is fascinating, Hannah. This might be so far the best documentary of the year.
Wow, and that is one that I do want to check out. So do you think I'd like it, though?
I think you would. I think you would love it.
Well,
okay. you it's got that local news angle, and you have experience in local news. It's got, but it's a mystery, and you really want them to solve it. Like, what, who, why, how? It's so many questions.
All right. Well, you know, Tickled has a certain appeal. It sounds like it would at least be somewhat more entertaining and funny on some level than a lot of the other movies out there. And a lot of documentaries are often kind of depressing. So it's good to know that there's a something that really just tackles a subject that we never in a million years would have thought would be the subject of a documentary.
How can you talk about tickling? I mean,
I know.
But we actually talk about Tickled in our next podcast, which immediately follows this one. We devoted an entire special edition podcast to the AFI Documentary Film Festival.
We felt so guilty that we'd actually taken 3 weeks off that we wanted to make sure people got their money's worth with this week's podcast.
So after this podcast ends, and then after a couple brief messages, We're going to come right back with the AFI Docs Film Festival podcast. Just a quick wrap-up of this one. Mm-hmm. We kind of split on Tarzan. We both agreed it's in the middle, I believe, but you liked it better than I did.
Yep.
BFG, I don't think either of us liked it.
BFG fans only.
BFG fans only. Very mm-hmm. good. Hunt for the Wilder People. Best movie of the week. Best movie of the week. Go see this movie.
Yep. Go find it.
It's fascinating. It's so much fun. Wiener Dog.
No.
Do it. You know what? Challenge yourself. Step outside your comfort zone.
Don't do it. As I said, you'd be barking up the wrong tree.
Oh, that's so funny yeah. right there.
Well, let's just say it's dog crap, and there's plenty of that in this movie too.
Oh, Hannah.
Come on.
Oh, Lake Cowboys, gross. You got to want it, and you need to be in a really big city to find it. So if you've been in a big city and you've seen everything else, check it out. But you can skip Lake Cowboys.
Yeah.
Tickled. You're going to have to work to find this if you're not in a big city. You need to see this documentary. Everybody needs to see this documentary. This documentary is not going away. People are going to talk about this for years.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I'll take your word for it, and I'll let everyone know when I finally get a chance to see it.
Well, thank you very much for listening to this segment of the podcast. Please stick around. Stay tuned for the next one, AFI Docs, when we bring in our special guest, Hannah. Who is it?
Jill Beniski, Arty Chick of chickflix.net.
All right. So once again, everybody, thank you for listening to the Cinema Clash.
Thanks.